a slippery-looking goat trail. It rose up a steep hill, disappearing into the mist. Ian bounded forward without a second of hesitation, Rowan close on his heels. I may as well have been climbing up a sheet of glass. My usually lucky Converse sneakers were completely useless in this situation, and I ended up on all fours, digging my fingers into the mud and pretending not to notice slugs nestled in the grass. Up top, Rowan was waiting to haul me up the last few feet, and I stumbled, finally upright onto the grassy clearing. Nearby, smooth black rock plunged into the water at a 45-degree angle, the ocean wild and frothy in front of us.
"People surf here!"
Rowan yelled to us over the wind. I looked down in disbelief, watching the water throw itself against the cliff. He shrugged.
"Extreme people."
"Good thing Aunt Mel didn't see Sleehead. She would have moved her wedding here,"
I said to Ian, but he was bent over his notebook again, scribbling furiously through the rain. I stepped toward the edge, the wind blasting me like a challenge.
"Careful," Rowan said.
I extended my arms out wide, feeling the way the wind fought and supported me at the same time. Rowan grinned, then mimicked my stance, the two of us standing like T's, spray hitting us full force. He touched the tips of my fingers with his. Rain speckled his glasses.
"I feel like we should yell."
"Yell what?"
I asked.
"Anything!"
He took a deep breath, then let out a loud,
"Haroo!
Haroo!"
I echoed. My voice sailed out over the water, overlapping with Rowan's. The sound made me feel alive and brave. I wanted to feel this way all the time.
"What are you guys doing?"
Ian dropped his notebook and stepped next to me, the wind whipping his hair into a frenzy.
"Yelling,"
I said. Rowan pointed his chin to the curtain of fog.
"Know what's out there?"
"The Loch Ness Monster?"
Ian guessed.
"America," Rowan said. "This is the westernmost point of Ireland. It's the closest you can get to the States while still being in Ireland."
I squinted out to the horizon. America. No wonder I felt so good here. There was an entire ocean between me and my problems. Ian bumped his shoulder into mine. Intentional or not, I didn't know. And for a second the three of us stood there, the wind pushing as hard as it could and us pushing back. Together. For 1 second I imagined what it would be like if this were real life. Me and Ian against the pressure of everything back home. I wanted this to be real life. Not a detour. The summer had been full of detours, usually of the nocturnal kind. It was just after 11 p.m. when I snuck out the back door, creeping through the yard and running down the sidewalk to Cubby's car. His face shone blue, lit up by his phone in the dark, and his radio played softly. I slid into the passenger seat, quickly pulling the door shut behind me.
"What would your brother think of you sneaking out with me?"
Cubby's voice was its usual laid-back drawl, but a thin line of nervousness etched the surface.
"Ian? Good question. Are you going to tell him?"
I asked, pointing my finger at his chest.
"Nope,"
he said, grinning. Ian didn't know I was out. He also didn't know about the post-practice drive Cubby and I had gone on. Or how during the drive, Cubby's hand had just casually made its way over to my knee, as if that was where it had always belonged. And I didn't push his hand away, either. I wanted it there. There were a lot of reasons I wasn't going to tell Ian, but the main one was this. Over the past few years, my brother's voice had taken on a specific quality whenever he talked about Cubby, like he'd just taken a bite of bitter chocolate. And tonight was not about Ian's approval or disapproval. It was about me. Me and Cubby.
You're sure you want to stay here?
Ian asked skeptically. We sat parked in front of a peeling burnt orange building that looked more like a prison than a hostel. Chains tethered the wrought iron furniture to the porch, and bars lined the windows.
Are they trying to keep people out or in?
I think it looks nice, I said. Very homey. Authentic.
Rowan and I exchanged a look. It had taken some convincing to get Ian to agree to stay in Dingle overnight. He'd wanted to keep going, but our guidebook stop was at a place called Inch Beach, and this was not exactly beach weather.
There was also the minor issue of hypothermia, which was starting to feel like more and more of a possibility.
There was still one problem, though. Dingle was in high tourist season, and that meant no vacancy, except for the Rainbow's End Hostel, whose way-too-cheery, flash-heavy website claimed to always have availability. Now having seen the hostel and all of its charm, I understood why.
Somewhere over the rainbow, Rowan deadpanned.
How Irish is that? He took the key out of the ignition.
Come on, I added. Anything has to be better than driving in that storm.
And you get to work on your article, Rowan joined in. I'm sure you'll have plenty of material after visiting the Burren and Slee Head.
True, Ian admitted. It would be nice to keep up on my writing. That way it isn't a huge job at the end. Plus, I need to post to my blog.
Perfect! Let's go, I said.
Half a day in Clover and already every bit of me ached. I couldn't get out of the back seat fast enough. For some place named Rainbow's End, the interior was surprisingly lacking in color. All except for brown. Brown floors, brown carpet, brown linoleum, and a brass light fixture missing 2 out of 5 bulbs. Even the smell was brown. A mixture of burnt toast and the lingering of a pot roast. I made my way up to a rickety wooden desk. Papers cluttered its surface and a cup of coffee sat on top of a grubby 3-ring binder.
Hello?
I called out. Brown swallowed up my voice.
It doesn't look like anyone is here. Maybe we should try somewhere else, Ian offered.
There is nowhere else. Believe me, we tried.
I bypassed the desk and headed down a dark hallway. Light trickled from underneath the door.
Hello?
I called, pushing it open slightly.
Anyone here?
A guy with a mass of curly white blonde hair sat playing a video game, his dirty feet propped up on the table in front of him. A large pair of headphones encased his ears.
Excuse me.
I reached out to tap his shoulder, but just before I made contact, he whirled around, crashing noisily to the floor.
Are you okay?
I scrambled to help him up.
Okay? Not terribly.
He yanked the headphones off. He was in his late teens or early 20s, furiously tan, and built small and muscular like a rock climber. His accent was decidedly not Irish. Was it Australian? British? He smiled wide, and his white teeth contrasted sharply against his tanned face.
How are you going?
How are you going? What was the correct answer to that? Good? To Electric Picnic? He didn't wait for me to figure it out.
So sorry about the mattresses. I know they're utter crap, but I guess that's why we have such an affordable rate. And to be honest, you didn't come all the way to the Emerald Isle to sleep anyway, right? You're here to explore.
I raised my eyebrows, completely lost.
I think you're mistaking me for someone else.
Someone he'd spoken to before. His eyes widened.
Oh, no, you aren't with the German group, are you? Forget what I said about the mattresses. Sleeping at the Rainbow's End is like sleeping on a cloud.
He sang the last part.
Nice save, I said. Do you have space for 3 people?
He clapped me on the shoulder.
Didn't you see the sign? We always have availability. I already told you about the mattresses, but let me sell you on the good parts of our humble Rainbow's End. We have a killer nightlife here. Party up front after dark every night, heaps of people, amber fluid, everything you could ask for.
He winked, erasing my ability to tell if he was joking or not. I'm Bradley, by the way. Welcome to the Rainbow's End, the most westernly youth hostel in Europe.
I'm Addie.
I shook his hand. You didn't by chance write the content on the website, did you? He bobbed his head enthusiastically. That I did, Addie. That I did. Built the whole thing in 48 hours. That thing is pretty bodgy, but it does a lot of my work for me, which means I get to spend my afternoon surfing.
Do you surf at Sleahead?
I asked. What kind of crazy do you think I am? He folded his arms and gave me an appraising look. Why do you look like you floated here? You weren't out walking in the storm, were you?
Driving. Our car isn't waterproof.
Ah, he said, like he knew all about it. I'm not supposed to let anyone in until after evening, but this looks like an emergency. You could use a hot shower.
Yes, I could, I replied gratefully.
He grabbed a grimy white binder from the table and began flipping through pages full of names and phone numbers. The hostel's record book, I assumed.
Where are you from?
Seattle. Well, that's where my brother and I are from.
The other guy we're with is from Dublin. A loud creak erupted behind me, and Rowan and Ian poked their heads in. Bradley immediately launched himself at them.
You must be brother, another guy. I'm Bradley.
He shook their hands enthusiastically. But why aren't you two as wet as this one? I thought your car wasn't waterproof. Rowan grimaced.
The back leaks the most.
And the back is where I sit, I filled in.
Way to be gentlemanly,
Bradley said brusquely, his gaze drifting back and forth between them. Ian yanked at his sweatshirt strings, his cheeks slightly pink.
She wasn't supposed to come. We weren't prepared.
Yeah, yeah, save it. Bradley waved them off. Now, come sign the book while little sister takes a shower. He turned to me. Bathroom is past the bunk room. Towels are in the closet next to it. I was out of the room before he even finished his sentence. Despite the bathroom's questionable cleanliness, the shower felt life-changing. I changed into a fresh set of clothes and wandered back into the lobby, tugging a comb through my hair. Bradley sat paging through a dog-eared copy of Encyclopedia of Surfing. When he saw me, he slow-clapped. Huge improvement. Huge! You look 100% less like a boiled rat.
Thank you,
I said, biting back a smile. I wasn't aware that I ever looked like a boiled rat, but that's an incredible compliment. Do you know where the guys are? He nodded his head to the dining room.
Bouncy one's in there, trying to track down the internet signal. Good luck to him. Sad guy's in the bunk room.
Sad guy?
Sad guy is here,
Rowan interrupted, walking into the room.
Ouch. Oh, sorry, bloke. I meant,
Bradley backpedaled. Rowan ignored him. Addie, are you ready to go to Inch Beach? It looks like it's clearing up out there.
Already?
I turned to look out the window. A patch of blue beamed brightly among the gray clouds. That was fast. Bradley dropped his book.
Weather turns pretty quickly around here.
He straightened up, dropping back into a sales pitch. And might I interest you two in renting bicycles for the small fee of €3 apiece? I can also toss in the best free tour guide Dingle has to offer. He extended his arms out wide.
Me.
Stretching my legs on a bicycle sounded like perfection.
That's a great idea. Rowan?
He hesitated, keeping his eyes firmly away from mine. Bikes would be great. I have no interest in getting back in that wet car, but I've spent some time on the peninsula, so I think I can manage the tour guide role. He didn't want an audience for the heartache homework. Rowan was really taking this seriously.
Ah, Bradley sang, looking between us.
We're just doing this guidebook thing, I said quickly.
My cheeks boiled, even though I had nothing to hide.
Guidebook thing. Is that what the kids are calling it? Bradley winked. No worries. I know when I'm not wanted.
Bikes are around back in the shed. You can have them on the house. Just don't tell my Uncle Ray. And you'll come to the party tonight, right? People start gathering on the porch at about 9 o'clock.
Party? I'd forgotten about the party.
Maybe, Rowan answered for us.
We'll be there, I said.
Bradley winked, then took off down the hall. Rowan exhaled slowly.
That guy is too much.
I like him.
I studied the fresh t-shirt Rowan had changed into. This one featured a cat holding a piece of pizza in one hand and a taco in the other. A purple and black galaxy played out in the background.
I think I like this one even more than the hypnotized cat, I said, pointing at it.
Thanks. He lifted the familiar coffee-stained book into the air. Ready for an adventure?
You mean, am I ready to walk back out into the cold?
I flourished my hand toward the door.
Why not?
Post-storm Dingle had a completely different temperament. The heavy clouds had thinned into a soft haze, and water lapped restfully against the edges of the cliffs. We rode past a marina filled with colorful bobbing boats and signs about a local hero, a dolphin named Fungi, who, according to Rowan, had been visiting tourists for decades.
We're here, Rowan called back to me.
We coasted off the main road, our bikes picking up speed as we curved down to a small inlet.
Wow, I said.
I know, right? Rowan said.
The sand at Inch Beach sparkled a deep gray, the sun kissing it with a touch of glitter. The tide was low, and silver ruffles of water unfurled lazily onto the shore. Out on the water, sunlight fragmented into kaleidoscope shapes. Stress melted from my shoulders, and my lungs opened up. I took the first deep breaths I had in days. Next to the sand was a small sea glass green building with Sammy's Store stenciled on the side. Large swirly script read,
Dear Inch, must I leave you? I have promises to keep, perhaps miles to go to my last sleep.
It reminded me of a paper I'd written for English last year about the similarities between Robert Frost stopping by woods on a snowy evening and Emily Dickinson's A Bird Came Down the Walk. I loved Emily Dickinson. She didn't get things like capitalization and punctuation right, but it didn't matter because you could still hear exactly what she was saying. As we made our way toward the beach, two messy-haired kids emerged from the store holding ice cream cones and chasing each other in a feisty game of tag. Their mom played along, lifting the young girl up in the air once she caught up with her.
She reminds me of my mom.
I nodded toward the woman. The girl now sat comfortably on the mom's shoulders, the little boy speeding around them in a circle. Rowan pulled his beanie over his ears.
How so?
The way she's running around with them.
She played with us, lots.
Even when it meant she didn't get other stuff done.
My mom had never been a picture-perfect type of mom, the kind with a clean kitchen floor or a PTA resume. But she was excellent at building blanket forts, and when she read to us, she did all the voices. Plus, she was just always there. Her going back to work had rocked me more than I'd thought it would.
She sounds really great, Rowan said, shoving his hands into his pockets.
Once I was talking to Ian and your mom came in to talk to him about school. I could tell she really cared.
She does.
So why aren't you telling her about Cubby? A little voice inside my head asked.
I brushed it away.
So what's your family like?
I asked carefully. I'd have to be deaf to miss the longing in his voice.
Ha, he said unhappily. It's just the three of us, my mum, my dad, and me. And we're a mess, that's what we are. Sometimes I wish there was more of us, to spread the misery around.
In my experience, that wasn't how misery worked, or happiness for that matter. Both tended to expand until everyone had an armful. I dug my big toe into the sand.
I'll bet there are lots of perks to being an only child.
The words felt false as they slid off my tongue.
Not that being an only child couldn't be great. I was sure it had its pluses and minuses, just like every family situation. But I didn't even know who I'd be without my brothers, especially Ian.
I guess so, he said very unconvincingly. He straightened up, squaring his shoulders to the horizon. You ready to do this?
The wind heard its cue, skipping off the water and blasting us with cold air. I had officially given up on being anything but frozen on this trip.
What guidebook lady wants, guidebook lady gets.
We headed toward the water, our toes sinking in the cold sand. When a cold wave slipped over our ankles, we both looked at each other in shock. Cold didn't even begin to describe it. It needed a more dramatic word, something like Arctic or glacial, maybe Arctic glacial.
We've got this, Rowan said, extending his hand to me.
Before I could overthink it, I grabbed tight, his hand warm and comfortable in mine as we plunged into the water.
So back to the guidebook. What's your thing? Rowan asked. What's something you survived that you thought you couldn't?
Losing Lena's mom to cancer. I was surprised by how easily the words bypassed my filter. I didn't usually talk about that experience with anyone but Lena. I'd tried a few times, but I found out pretty quickly that most people don't actually want to know about the hard things you've been through. They just want to look like they care, and then move on to the next subject as quickly as possible.
Rowan felt different. He looked up, his gray eyes stricken.
I didn't know her mom died. How long was she sick?
Only a few months. It was so disorienting. One minute she was running us around town looking for the best fish taco, and the next...
I trailed off. The water tingled against my shins. Whenever I thought about those months after Hadley's diagnosis, I remembered the sounds. The beeping hospital machines. The whooshing of the ventilator. How quiet Lena's apartment was in the afternoons when I brought her her homework. I was supposed to be the go-between, delivering homework both ways, but the teachers all knew the score, so they never cared that I rarely brought any back. The water inched above my knees. I don't know if Ian told you, but Lena moved in with us right after the funeral. She was really shut down. She even stopped eating, which is a huge deal because she loves food more than anyone I know. I ended up getting really obsessed with cooking shows, because the only way I could get her to eat was by making things I knew she couldn't possibly turn down.
You can cook? Rowan said hungrily.
What did you make for her?
A tall wave slammed into our knees, sending a spray of salt water into my face. I wiped my eyes on the neckline of my shirt. It was taking every ounce of my willpower not to turn and run out of the water.
Triple chocolate cupcakes, bacon-wrapped asparagus, wild blueberry pancakes with whipped cream, gourmet mac and cheese. That one was probably my best. It had four kinds of cheese plus bacon and truffle oil.
Rowan moaned.
I haven't eaten anything but sugar puffs since I left Dublin yesterday.
I thought you loved sugar puffs.
I do love sugar puffs, he said adamantly. But I love bacon and truffle oil more.
He looked down at the water, then squeezed my hand.
How's this? We far enough?
For a second, I didn't know what he was talking about. But then I realized water was up past my mid-thigh, waves kissing the hem of my shorts.
Can you feel your legs? I asked.
He grimaced. What legs?
This is worse than being in the back seat of Clover.
We dropped hands, and I skimmed my fingers across the water's icy surface.
Rowan's turn.
What about you? What's the hardest thing you've survived?
This year.
No hesitation. And no eye contact. Which for most people meant door closed. But me being me, I had to at least try the knob.
This year, because of your breakup?
He exhaled, then wiggled his shoulder like he was trying to shake off his mood.
Is this too depressing? I know you're going through your own heartache. I don't want to burden you with mine.
You aren't burdening me, I said, telling the truth.
I liked that he felt like he could talk to me. We were a support team of two. And what was your girlfriend's name anyway? Or, sorry, girlfriend? Boyfriend? I shouldn't assume. It was actually a goldfish, he said seriously. We dated for a whole year, but every few hours she forgot who I was and we had to start over.
Oh, I said, adopting his serious tone. That sounds challenging. Did the goldfish have a name?
He hesitated for a second and his smile faded. It's my parents, he finally said. They're getting divorced.
Oh.
I didn't know what to say. His answer was not what I was expecting, but it shouldn't have surprised me so much. Heartache came in all sorts of flavors.
I'm really sorry, I said.
Me too. He gave me a rueful smile.
If they could get past their issues, I think they'd actually be pretty great together, but...
He trailed off, shivering violently. I suddenly became acutely aware of the cold. He gave me a lopsided smile, his eyes not quite meeting mine. I think I'm about to succumb to hypothermia.
That means we have to stand here for one more second, I said.
Are you surviving this moment of discomfort? Have there been other moments of pain or discomfort that you thought you couldn't survive, and yet you did?
Now, I said, turning back to the shore.
We ran. My legs were so frozen I could barely feel them churning the water to white. But Rowan's warm hand found its way back to mine. And suddenly I felt that same lightning sensation I had back at the Burren. It was possible that Guidebook Lady was onto something. Bradley was not exaggerating about the nightlife at the Rainbow's End. Music blared from a miniature speaker and every light blazed. More people than I'd seen on the entire peninsula were crowded onto the porch and steps. Someone had built a fire in a garbage can, and flames licked the edges of the metal.
The Rainbow's End's infamous nightlife, Rowan said, skidding to a stop.
The way back had taken us twice as long since we had to pedal uphill, and my shaky legs meant sore muscles tomorrow.
Any sign of Ian?
No,
but there's our host.
Bradley sat holding court in an anemic-looking lawn chair. He'd paired a too small button-up shirt with a tee featuring Jesus on a surfboard. Bradley caught sight of me and waved, gesturing dramatically to the seat next to him. The seat of honor. Part of me wanted to coast on the calm feeling I'd carried back from Inch Beach by going straight to bed, but Bradley kept waving his hands excitedly at me.
I'll take the bikes back, Rowan said, grabbing my bike handlebars. Better get over there. We don't want to keep the king waiting.
As I made my way over to Bradley, Ian suddenly appeared at my side, latching onto my arm. He wore double hoodies, and his hair looked more tangled than usual.
Where have you been? He asked urgently.
I shook him off.
Inch Beach. Didn't Rowan tell you? I didn't think you would be all day.
All day? We were only gone for a few hours.
Suddenly I realized that Ian was rocking back and forth from his heels to the balls of his feet, which was Ian speak for, I have something to spill. My heart fell. Not another text. Please, not another text from back home.
Ian, what is it? What's going on?
He set his mouth in a grim line.
Mom called.
And?
Huge rush of relief. That was manageable. Mom was manageable.
What did she say?
She wanted to talk to Howard.
Yikes.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Oh, right. We should probably come up with a plan of what to say next time she calls.
He rocked onto his heels again, spitting the rest out.
I got nervous and I had Bradley pretend to be Howard.
What?
I yelped so loudly that a cluster of long-haired girls looked up from the fire.
You asked Bradley to pretend he was Howard?
Please tell me you're joking.
He grabbed for his hair, twisting the same snarled piece.
It actually wasn't too bad. His American accent was sort of questionable, but I think she bought it.
No, I whispered. This was a disaster. Less than a day in, and Ian was already jeopardizing us. We were never going to pull this off.
Ian, what were you thinking? You should have waited to talk to me.
He threw his arms up defensively.
She kept calling and calling. You know how she is about the persistence thing. I think Katerina warped her brain. I had to improvise. And besides, you said you were stopping at a site, not leaving for the whole night.
The accusation in his voice was too familiar. You know what Cubby's been doing, right?
This isn't my fault, Ian, I snapped. It was your decision to stay in Ireland, not mine.
I shoved past him, heading for the porch steps.
Addie, Bradley called. Did you hear I talked to your mom? Sorry, Bradley, now's not a good time.
I stomped into the building and made a beeline for the bunk room, collapsing onto my bed. I was exhausted and starving. But instead of leaving the room to forage for food, I dug my phone out of my pocket and searched for Indy Ian. I wanted to see for myself what this trip and the possible end of our sports careers had been about. Two articles came up automatically. Is the garage band dead? And I went to the mall. Here's what happened.
Here it goes, I said aloud.
Two sentences in, and I fell headfirst into the world of garage bands. The article blew me away. Ian's voice rang through loud and strong, but with an extra gloss, like it had been coated with furniture polish and set out in the sun to shine. It was well written and intellectual, but approachable, too, packed full of personality and enough enthusiasm to make me actually care. I quickly pulled up the second article. I went to the mall. Here's what happened. This one was about him wandering around the mall near our house, reviewing the music played in individual stores. When had he done that? The only time I'd ever seen him at the mall was when our mom dragged us at the beginning of the school year. I dropped my phone to the bed, my chest heavy. There was a whole part to Ian I'd never known existed, one that he hadn't told me about, that he'd chosen not to tell me about.
You did the same thing, my brain nudged silently.
I hadn't told Ian about Cubby. He'd found out all on his own. And then he'd confronted me immediately. Addie, not him, anyone but him. Ian's voice startled me so much I almost fell back out the window. It was 2 a.m., just a few days after our field trip to the Troll, and he was sitting at my desk in the dark, his headphones pushed down around his neck. I recovered just in time, stumbling into the room and turning to pull the window most of the way shut. Cubby's car was already gone.
What do you mean? Not who?
I said, pulling my shoes off and tossing them onto the floor. I'd taken to wearing running sneakers at night. It made the climb easier.
I just saw you get out of his car.
Ian stood, sending my desk chair spinning.
Addie, not him, he repeated, his face pleading.
A slow fury built in my center, surprising me with its intensity. Why did he think he got a say in who I dated?
Ian, I get that Cubby's your teammate, but you don't get to tell me whether or not I hang out with him.
He pulled his headphones off his neck, bawling them into his fist.
Addie, I'm with him a lot. I hear how he talks about girls. You don't want to hang out with him, believe me.
But I didn't want to believe him. And so, I didn't. I can usually count on sleep to polish out the hard edges of whatever I'm worrying about, like a broken bottle tumbling through waves to become sea glass. But I spent the night as jagged as they come. The mattresses were, as promised, utter crap, and a little after 1 a.m. the entire party, including Ian and Rowan, descended on the bunk beds in a stampede. Finally, morning came.
and I woke to light filtering softly through the barred windows. I rolled to my side. An orchestra of different snores and breathing patterns wafted through the room. Most of the beds still contained lumps of people. Everyone's, that was, except Ian's. I jumped to sitting. Ian's and Rowan's beds were empty, the sheets and pillows removed. Even their bags were gone.
"Are you kidding me?"
I yelped into the silence. They'd left me. Again. Even Rowan. I hurled myself out of bed, stumbling over a child-sized backpack propped up against my bed before crashing loudly into a bedpost. "Hello?" a startled voice said from the top bunks.
"Sorry."
I raced barefoot out into the hall and into the dining room, colliding face first with Ian, who of course was holding a steaming hot mug of something.
"Addie!" he yelled, the drink sloshing everywhere. "Why are you running?"
My relief was so intense that I nearly folded in half. I rested my hands on my knees, waiting for my heart to slow.
"I thought you left me."
"Left you? What would possibly make you think that?"
He opened his eyes wide and then snorted, laughing at his own joke. Laughing. He was laughing. Had he forgotten about last night's fight? He grabbed a handful of napkins from the kitchen table and swiped at the spill on his shoes.
"Yes, really funny. So, so funny."
I jabbed him in the shoulder. His black eye looked a little better today. The outer edges were already fading to a dull green.
"What's so funny?" Rowan asked, joining us in the hallway.
"The fact that I now have PTSD over being left behind," I said.
Rowan's hair was nicely rumpled. Today's cat shirt featured a bespectacled cat with the words, "Harry Potter."
"That's not new," Ian said. "You did that every time one of us graduated to the next level of school. I thought you were going to have a breakdown when I graduated from elementary school to junior high."
"Ian, shut up,"
I demanded. But I relaxed a little. His tone was still teasing. "Why are you in such a good mood anyway?" He held up his phone. "I'm only 2 followers away from 10,000. Everyone loved the photos of Sleehead in the Burren."
"Ian, that's great,"
I said, meaning it. I wanted to tell him how much I liked his articles, but covered in coffee at the Rainbow's End didn't feel like quite the right time. I wanted it to be special. He nodded happily.
"Hopefully the next stop will put us over the edge. Get dressed. We're leaving in 5.
"How about 6?
I asked.
Rowan caught my eye and grinned. 5, Ian said. "Don't push me, sis."
Killarney National Park. "Are you enjoying the wooded delights of Ireland, love? Have you noticed the trees standing in tight communal bunches, branches locked together in an embrace of mutual affection and appreciation? Does it remind you of me and you? The way we just get each other?"
"Me too, pet. Me too.
Muse with me for a moment. Have you ever stopped to think about how much work a tree represents? How many steps it's gone through to get where it is today? Take one of those mammoth trees outside your window, for example. Their ancestors had to migrate to our bonny island. Birds and animals carried seeds like hazel and oak across land bridges that once connected Ireland to Britain and Europe. Other seeds, the light ones like birch and willow, arrived on a puff of air. And that was just the beginning. Once they were here, those tiny seeds had a lot of work to do. All the growing, stretching, reaching. Makes me think about all the work you're doing."
"What work?"
"Heartache, love. The aching of the heart. And unlike so many other tasks, it's one only you can do. No delegating or shortcuts allowed. We humans love to try to circumvent pain. We want a shortcut, a trap door. Something that will slurp us up and spit us out on the other side, No sticky messiness necessary. But the sticky messiness is required. The process is built into the name. If you want to get through the heartache, you're going to have to let your heart, you know, ache.
And no matter how many distractions you pile on, cartons of ice cream, shopping binges, marathon naps, you can't outsmart heartache. It has nowhere to be, nothing to do. It will just stand there, buffing its nails, waiting until you're ready. It's a persistent little devil.
So let's get to work, Sugar Plum. Let's quit drowning our pain in music and credit card bills and cyber-stalking. Let's confront it. Let's own it. You've got a job to do. And the sooner you get to work, the sooner you can get back to frolicking through a forest like the sparkly little forest nymph I know you to be.
Heartache homework. Ready to do the work, love?
I thought so.
Find a tree that speaks to you, and nestle up at its base. And then, when you're good and comfortable, name the thing that hurts you the most about this heartache of yours. Don't flinch. Don't look away. Just face it.
Why the tree, you ask?
Because trees are exceptionally good listeners, of course.
Excerpt from Ireland for the Heartbroken, An Unconventional Guide to the Emerald Isle, 3rd Edition.
Well, this sucks, Rowan said from the other side of the tree.
Agreed, I answered. We decided to use the same mossy-trunked tree, him on one side, me on the other. And so far, the heartache homework was making my heart feel achy. Which I guess was the point.
Looking right at heartache was like looking at the sun. It burned.
I shivered, rubbing at my goosebumps. My clothes were soaked again. A night in the Rainbow's End carport hadn't done the magic we'd hoped for. Clover's back seat had morphed subtly from soggy to mushy. And even though Bradley had donated a few towels to what he called Operation Keep Addie from Looking Like a Boiled Rat, my shorts were soaked through before we even hit the main road. I was also dealing with some extra stress. Lena had found a flight that would get her and Wren into Dublin by tomorrow evening, and Wren had even managed to secure 3 tickets to Electric Picnic so we could all go to the concert together. Seeing the email sent insecurity ricocheting through me. What if I didn't like Wren? Or worse, what if he didn't like me? Could a boyfriend and best friend coexist if they didn't like each other? And if not, who got the axe? I wrapped my arms around myself and looked up through the trees, trying to refocus my mind. The forest was absolutely drenched in moss. Every surface and every branch dripped and glistened with it, softening everything to a green glow.
"We'd better do this before Ian gets back," I said.
We'd convinced him to take a walk, but I doubted he'd be gone long. He was antsy to get to the next title track site.
Okay, you first.
What's the worst part of your heartache? Rowan asked.
Mine was a hard call. Was it public humiliation? Letting my brother down?
An unexpected answer rose to the surface. I didn't listen to myself. There were so many red flags, but I ignored them. I let myself down.
I exhaled slowly, sadness coating me from head to toe.
What about you? What's the worst part?
Rowan shifted, crunching some twigs. Knowing I don't have any control over the situation.
I might steal that one.
Rowan hesitated again.
You can tell me to shut up, but what happened exactly? Did you break up with him or did...
It was him. I pressed my head against the bark, my heart sending out another pulse of ache. Rowan absorbed my silence for a moment, then stood and crunched his way around the tree, sitting next to me.
Hey, Addie, you know I'm here for you, right? Like, if you need to talk.
I met his eyes.
They were big and liquid, ready to absorb whatever ugliness I had for them. And suddenly the whole ugly story rose up until it was pushing against the back of my teeth. I did need someone to talk to about it all. But I've been telling myself the story for 10 days now, and it had become pretty clear what part I played in it. Loser girl who throws herself at a guy because she's desperate to keep his attention. Not exactly flattering. Or friend attracting. Thanks, Rowan. But I think I'm done here, I said, climbing quickly to my feet. At the car, Ian narrowed his eyes at us.
Why do you guys look so mopey?
He was right. The time in Killarney National Park had really brought my mood down. I'd always heard you were supposed to distract yourself from heartbreak, not zero in on it. Why was Guidebook Lady so insistent on digging into heartache? We don't look mopey, Rowan said. We're sad. They're two different things.
Well, this isn't going to help, Ian said, tossing me his phone.
Text from Mom. That woman is relentless.
Great, I groaned.
I pulled up the text. How's Italy? How are things with Addie? Well, at least she actually seems to think we're in Italy, I said.
He shook his head, unconvinced. Or she's testing us.
I wrote back. Hey, Mom, this is Addie. Things are going great. Italy is so beautiful and warm. You were right. We just needed some time together. Really feeling some great sibling vibes.
I regretted the text the second I hit send. It sounded like it had been written by a deranged cheerleader. A deranged cheerleader who was obsessed with the fact that her body temperature hadn't been normal in days. If Bradley's cameo hadn't tipped her off, this would.
She wrote back immediately. Had no idea Howard was Australian. How interesting.
Ridiculous.
Either she was laying a trap or spending so much time with Aunt Mel was warping her brain. She knew Howard was American. It was a requirement for running the American cemetery. I was so absorbed in trying to decipher my mom's text that it took me several minutes to realize that Ian and Rowan were now arguing.
Ian, I'm being serious. I can't get caught.
Rowan's hands were as tense as his voice, and his eyes darted nervously to the rearview mirror. I turned to look behind me, but the road was empty, except for a long, fuzzy strip of grass growing through the middle of it. Roads had no chance here. Ireland liked to swallow them whole.
I just don't think we should risk it.
Ian's mouth settled into a hard line.
Rowan, it took us 3 weeks to track down where the Red Room is.
And you just want to throw that all away?
He jabbed his finger accusingly.
I thought you were a fan.
Whoa, I said, perking up. Those were fighting words. But they didn't seem to ruffle Rowan.
He shook his head soundly.
Stop acting the maggot. Not wanting to see it and not wanting to get caught are two different things.
This sounded interesting. I abandoned Ian's phone and scrambled forward to read the next site on the map.
What's Torque Manor?
Rowan inclined his head slightly toward Ian.
Should I tell her or do you want to?
Be my guest, Ian said, dropping his head back down to his map.
Back at the rainbow's end, he had peeled the tape off his window, and now he had his right hand out, fingers spread in the wind.
I'm waiting, I prompted.
Rowan sighed heavily, then met my expectant eyes.
Torque Manor is a summer house that used to belong to the drummer's uncle. They recorded an entire album in the sitting room there.
It's called the Red Room,
Ian added, taking over. Whenever he was excited about a story, he had to get involved in the telling.
They went in thinking the album would be more upbeat and kind of poppy. But the room was full of heavy drapes and carpet, and all the fabric absorbed some of the sound and completely changed the way the songs came out. After that, they started producing songs that had the same moody vibe. They even recreated the same atmosphere in real recording studios with
pillows and things. The room changed their whole musical direction.
This was exactly the kind of musical fact that Ian loved to geek out over. Thanks to Ian, I knew tons of odd music trivia. Things like Paul McCartney hearing the melody for Yesterday in a Dream, and Bill Wyman being asked to join the Rolling Stones solely because he had access to an amplifier. No wonder Ian's knee had graduated from bouncing to marching. Seeing something as iconic to him as the Red Room was his dream come true.
Okay.
I studied Rowan's grim face, allowing the dot, dot, dot to settle. Then I jabbed him in the shoulder.
So what's the problem here? Why are you so nervous?
Rowan exhaled, giving his glasses a shove.
I just don't want to get caught trespassing. School's about to start, and if I get in any kind of trouble with the law, I'll get expelled.
Trespassing is such a harsh word, Ian said, a grin swallowing his face whole. I prefer unlawful entry.
Trespassing?
I transferred my jabbing finger from Rowan to Ian.
No way! Priority number one is keeping Mom and Dad from knowing about our side trip, which means we are not doing anything that could potentially involve police.
No one is going to call the police. Ian tugged on his hair.
Why are you guys being so dramatic? All we're going to do is drive in there, snap a few photos, and get out. The owners will never even know we were there.
Until photos of their house show up online and then they remember that you heckled them with emails for a full month. Rowan dragged his eyes away from the road and tapped his chin in mock thoughtfulness.
What did that last email from them say? Oh, yes. I believe their exact words were, "Come near our property and we will not hesitate to notify the authorities."
But they didn't say which authorities, Ian said, his smile still plastered on his face. Maybe they meant the town water authorities,
or the leading authority on climate change. Oh, Ian.
This plan, whatever it entailed exactly, was so my brother. One part danger, two parts music trivia, three parts rebel. Add a handful of jalapenos and some marshmallows and we had ourselves the perfect Ian recipe. Nothing I said was going to matter. May as well conserve energy. I might need it for running. I tried to send Rowan an abandon-all-hope shrug, but his eyes locked onto the road.
Look for a mossy, broken-down fence a few kilometers past the bent speed limit sign, Ian read from his phone.
He stuck his head out into the wind, and his hair puffed into a large dandelion.
Addie, did you see that sign back there? Did it look kind of bent to you?
It was a Guinness advertisement, I said.
But Ian, what about the fan who got arrested?
Rowan hadn't known Ian long enough to understand what he was up against.
The break-in wasn't that long ago. You know the owners are going to be on high alert. They're probably sleeping with shotguns under their pillows.
A fan got arrested? I flicked the back of Ian's head. Was the fan part of his brain completely overriding the common sense part? Ian's smile only grew.
That was a whole year ago, and that girl was a mega stalker. You don't just walk into a stranger's house, not when they're home.
Because you only walk into a stranger's house when they're not home? I clarified.
Oh, she did more than walk in.
Rowan pulled his glasses off and wiped at his eyes in a move that made him look like an old, tired businessman. But because it was Rowan, a cute, old, tired businessman. She made a ham and banana sandwich in the kitchen and then ate it while rolling around on the carpet. The owners were sleeping upstairs and she woke them up.
Ew, I wailed. Ham and banana? Is that a title track thing or an Irish thing?
Definitely not Irish, Rowan said, a wry smile crossing his face.
Haven't you heard? All we eat are potatoes and beef stew.
Ian clasped his hands prayer-like in front of him and pushed his lower lip out in a pout.
Come on, guys. I promise not to make a gross sandwich and roll around on the carpet. No one will see us. No one will know.
I shook my head disgustedly.
Ian, the lower lip pout thing stopped working about 10 years ago.
He pooched it out even more.
The lower lip pout is successful at least 73% of the time.
How do you think I passed Espanol last year? Señora Murdoch can never resist it.
I shook my head impatiently. Quit trying to change the subject. Rowan's telling you that he doesn't want to go to Torque Manor, which means we are not going to Torque Manor.
That was the bent speed limit sign!
Ian shrieked, hurling his body partially out the window.
We're almost there! Rowan, we have to go!
Fine. Rowan's gaze swiveled back and forth from my brother to the road. But listen to me, I cannot get caught. Cannot get caught. My parents are already in a constant state of stress. I can't stir the pot by getting in trouble.
That's it!
Ian yelled. Rowan hit the brakes, and Ian all but threw himself out the window, extending his face toward the tall, ivy-covered fence. An oversized no-trespassing sign cozied up to an even larger Beware of Dogs sign. I pointed to the image on the sign. What a cute, snarling shadow dog. Ian waved me off.
That sign's a fake. Half the time people put those up when all they really have are goldfish.
Rowan has a goldfish, I said. His mouth twitched. Had a goldfish. Had Addie.
Look, as long as we stick to the plan, we'll be fine. We already know that the room is ground level and faces the backyard. It will probably take me 10 seconds to find.
Rowan, all you have to do is drive in and wait. I'll do the rest. This was train mode Ian. I couldn't stop him. Rowan couldn't stop him. A slab avalanche couldn't stop him. Our best bet was to do exactly what he wanted. Get in there, get a photo, and run.
Fine, Rowan sighed, rolling his eyes to the ceiling.
Ian bounced giddily, pulling his notebook out.
Thanks, Rowan. I really owe you.
Rowan put the car into reverse.
Yeah, you really do.
What about me? I asked, yanking my legs out of the crevice behind the passenger seat. Over the course of the day, I had reached a new and alarming mental space where I now accepted my legs being asleep as normal. Ian petted me on the head.
Thanks, Addie. I really owe you too, I guess.
I shoved his hand away. No, I mean, what do you want me to do while you take photos of the inside of someone's house? Go with you?
No. It would be better if you stay right where you are. Guard Rowan's stuff.
He tried to pet my head again, but I ducked out of the way. I was about to insist on going with him, but when I straightened up, Ian had already moved into his pregame routine, a ritual I'd seen just shy of a million times. First, he tied and retied his shoes. Once, twice, three times. Then he cracked his neck back and forth, finishing with a firm shoulder shake. Watching him soothed me. If anyone could outrun an angry shadow dog, it was Ian. If he weren't the quarterback of the football team, he'd be the running back. He was the fastest sprinter on the team. There was also the semi-comforting fact that Ian was unequivocally lucky. If, for instance, the owner saw us and decided to shoot our car with flamethrowers, Clover would choose that exact moment to hit a pothole, and Ian would be launched from the car just at the right second, tumbling into soft grass and surviving the ordeal completely unscathed. It was Rowan and me who would end up crispy.
Where is he? It's been donkey's years, Rowan hummed under his breath.
Our eyes met over the clock on the dashboard. I wasn't sure about donkey's years, but it had been a lot longer than the 2 minutes Ian had promised before he disappeared out the window. Now we were both impersonating him, jiggling anxiously. Torque Manor was trying very hard to be charming, and the ingredients were all there. A steeply pitched roof, white-trimmed windows, well-kept flower garden. But the longer we sat there, the more I realized there was something eerie about it, too. Thick white sheets shrouded the patio chairs, and the surrounding trees grew in a wild tangle, filling the sky with branches and making the afternoon feel much darker than it actually was. At least Ian was right about no one being there. There weren't any signs of life, No cars in the driveway, no shoes at the door, and no noise. Even the birds and insects were quiet.
Suddenly, Rowan ducked low.